Welcome to Beyond the Summit. This is Scalability's series of podcasts where we have some really interesting chats to some really interesting Northwest business leaders. If you want to hear more in the series, hit subscribe. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about what we do, visit us at scale-ability.co.uk.
Welcome to season two of Beyond the Summit, Scalability's podcast, with me, your host, Ruth Wilkinson.
I'm here with Nicola Combe of Morecambe Bay World. Nicola, we're going to spend some time together over the next two podcasts, and we're going to talk about all things you, your business, and then also some insights into what you've learned along the way. Can you give us a quick summary of yourself and what Morecambe Bay World does?
So I'm Nicola Combe. I am from Lancaster, born and bred, and my company is Morecambe Bay Wills and Estates Limited, if you want to give it its full title. And we provide affordable peace of mind for people by giving them the protection of wills, of lasting powers of attorney, of trusts, and then we also help people when they've lost someone and they need to undertake the role of executor. So we give them a helping hand to do that as well. And we service anywhere in the Morecambe Bay area, and that includes all the way up to Cumbria and across to the Yorkshire Dales and down to sort of Preston, and we also service North Wales as well.
We'll come to the North Wales bit shortly. In terms of yourself and Morecambe Bay Wills as a business, it was you at one point, but it's no longer just you, and you've gone through some growth. We will explore how and why you went through that growth, but as it stands today, what does Morecambe Bay Wills as a business look like?
So we're a team of women, which is sort of accidental. We didn't aim to be a full team of women, but we are. So it started off with me as something to do for a couple of days a week after I lost my husband in August 2018. And when I decided to go back to work, I decided to retrain and do something different just for something to keep me busy. So that was in the beginning of March 2019. And since then, we've taken on another five people and actually just about to release the news of another one. So we're now a team of six women, soon to be seven. And we are mostly local to this area. So we now have quite a large team, and not just little old me on my own for 2 days a week.
No, it quickly outgrew 2 days a week, didn't it?
Just a bit.
Yeah. What is it, if you don't mind sharing with the listeners, that drove this business choice? And when I mean that, I don't mean to open a business. I mean this particular business.
Yeah, so I mean, I was working in the corporate world. I was a management consultant doing digital transformation and traveling all over the world to help companies go paperless and look at how they looked at their documents and their data, et cetera. And then in late 2017, my husband Jim fell ill, and we quickly found out that it was pancreatic cancer, and it's one of the worst cancers that you can have. Nobody wants to have cancer, but if you get one, you certainly don't want pancreatic cancer. And we knew that his time was limited. So I gave up work in 2018, the beginning of 2018, for whatever time we knew we had together. And he died in August 2018. But during the time between his diagnosis and when he did pass away, we tried to make new wills. We'd had wills made in 2008. But we knew they were out of date, so we wanted to update them. We had someone come around to the house as a will writer. And unfortunately, those wills didn't get updated before Jim died more quickly than we thought he was going to, actually. So we were left in a bit of a mess. But also during the time that he was really ill, we also didn't have powers of attorney. In fact, we didn't really know much about powers of attorney at the time. And what that meant was that if Jim was ill or he wasn't able to, he was in hospital as he was several times, I wasn't able to take care of his financial affairs and make decisions for him, nor was I able to make any transactions for him. But more importantly for me, actually, I wasn't able to make decisions for him from a health perspective. So, you know, when he was seriously ill and unable to make those decisions himself, then the doctors were talking about decisions about treatment that really I knew Jim didn't want. And so through not having those documents, we quickly realised that we needed to have them. The cancer team told us, the oncology team said, get them in place. But they took a couple of months to come through. And actually, he passed away before one of them was actually ever registered. So having gone through that and then having lost him and then having to try and navigate the fields that I'd not done before of probate and inheritance tax and all of the challenges that having an out-of-date will caused, I actually sat and I thought, you know, I could do this and I probably could do it really well. And I think I really would like to try and see if I could retrain. I had a legal background a long, long time ago. My first ever job was in a solicitor's office as a junior. And I started doing training as a legal executive and I didn't finish that training. Well, I've changed. But I thought, you know, I think I could go back and do this. And when I had to make a decision in January 2019, after Jim had died, about what I wanted to do, rather than go back into the world of sort of globetrotting and, you know, making money for other people or for shareholders in the corporate world, I actually thought, you know, I could do this, but I could also do this by trying to give back a little bit. So to the people who had helped me through that year, that horrendous year. So, you know, the local community and particularly cancer care in Lancaster, although they look after North Lancashire and South Cumbria. And I just thought, you know, if I did this, I could make it affordable because we were shocked at the price that we were having to pay for new wills and powers of attorney. And also maybe I could give something back. So I just decided that I was going to go and retrain. And, you know, lo and behold, Morecambe Bay Wills was born. I went off and did my training at the Society of Will Writers and then decided, you know, I was going to set up my own business rather than go and work for someone else. And then it just sort of went from there, really.
One of the questions then, which might be a bit close to home, maybe a bit sensitive, but some people having gone through what you went through, what you and Jim went through, might want to never go near any of that ever again. You didn't. You decided to go headlong into that. Do you know what it is about you or about why that you were able to almost put yourself back into that circumstance to be able to help other people?
You know, nobody's ever asked me that question, Ruth. I think I was, you know, look, I'm quite a smart person. You know, I've got a lot of skills and a lot of experience, but if it can be really, really, really difficult for me, then how must it be if you've got literally no idea of where to start? And I think it was just, you know, the experience that I'd had doing lots of big projects and, you know, doing, I don't know, gathering information and stuff just made me think, you know, I think I could actually do this. And I think it was also that I wasn't fearful of doing it. I did say right at the very beginning, I actually said to someone, I don't know whether this is going to be the right thing. Because although I'm really passionate about it, I don't know whether it's going to be too emotional, you know, having to face those, you know, maybe somebody in the same situation. And so I'll give it a year, but I will give it a year and I'll spend some money on a website and, you know, brochures and branding, etc. But I'm going to give it a year. And at the end of the year, I'll decide whether or not it's the right thing for me. So I think thinking that I could do it, but then doing it could have been a very different a different thing. But actually, once I started doing it, I went, there was two things that happened. One is I went to see a lady who had recently lost her husband, and we sat and chatted about some of the experiences and, you know, how it is and, you know, sitting by the dinner table by yourself, for example. And when I left, she said, you know, you really know how I feel. So that was a really good experience, although not a nice one in some ways. And then the other thing was that the consultancy that I've been working for came back to me, I think, in the October and said, we've got a project. We'd like you to do it. We'd like you to go to Boston for 6 months. And it was really lucrative. And I actually just said, no chance. I really don't want that life anymore. And I think that just made me realise that it was very quickly that I said, you know, I'm not going to give this just a year. I really love what I'm doing and I'm just going to carry on. So, yeah.
There's a strength in that, though, isn't there? Somewhere there's someone, you know, yeah. I'll give it a year. You know, you've already, as you've said, that. So, well, that's 12 months. I'm now going to commit. At a minimum, I'm committing 12 months. And yeah. You know, people often talk about after losing somebody, don't make any significant decisions for a period of time, and don't do this and don't do that. And do you, on reflection, was it the right time?
I think I'd given myself a few months. So I knew I needed to do something because I'm, you know, I was young, I was 53, you know, I wasn't just not going to work. And although I was financially dependent, I was like, I need to do something. And, you know, I could have just, you know, maybe just taken a simple job, and, you know, and used my savings, etc. But I think it was just that sort of, I really don't want someone else to go through what I've got. I'm never going to stop somebody losing their husband to cancer, or I'm never going to stop someone having a tough time trying to go through all of the paperwork and things. But, you know, if I can just make it easier, I think that's what drove me. And actually, you know, if I can raise a bit of money at the same time, it sort of felt like it was something that, I don't know, I was sort of really doing in Jim's memory. You know, he always used to be really proud, and people said to me, always really proud of everything that you've achieved, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually thought, you know what, I think he would be really proud of me doing this. So, you know, that was something that really made me, I think that spurred me on, if I'm really honest. Really did spur me on.
And what were the, let's go back to the first year, you know, you've started it, the website's all shiny and new, you know, when you're out there in the real world. Any surprises, things you maybe didn't think you would encounter? Because you've had a background in, you know, large companies, assessing risk, mitigating issues, doing all that kind of thing. Anything that came to you that you thought, I did not think that was going to be the issue?
Funnily enough, when you go and do your training, and this is for anyone setting up in whatever business they have, you know, you might go and do your technical training. So I did my technical legal training, but then I've never run a business. So I had literally no idea, you know, how to do the legal stuff that I needed to do, you know, with the regulatory stuff, or certainly, I had absolutely no idea about marketing, even though I have an MBA and marketing was one of the subjects that I studied. But, you know, the whole new world of social media was absolutely just like, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And luckily, I found someone who could help me, Ruth. but I think that was probably the biggest thing. I think the thing that surprised me in a really positive way was how local people supported what I was doing, you know, because I was really no one, you know, I mean, in terms of my experience in what I was doing, I was no one. I mean, you know, I had a reputation to build up, and I was really blown away with actually the support of a lot of local business women. So I sort of really got stuck into the local business women's community and said, look, you know, I'm new at this. I sort of need a little bit of your help. So can you help me with things like I might need to do with accounting, for example, or social media, or, you know, legal stuff or whatever. And in return, you know, what I'd really like to do is sort of you be my guinea pigs is a bit of a strong word, but actually, yeah, I would really
that,
like
that test to pilot
start doing this, you know. And I knew the really brilliant thing about the Society of Will Writers was that I had a full technical team behind me. So I came out of the course and I had no idea how to run a business, but I just thought, you know, it can't be that difficult. So I just asked around and networked quite a lot. I got people to let me be the person who wrote their wills, and I got them to give me feedback, and that's how it started. But one thing I didn't know, and I'm really good at, because of my background, I'm really good at processes, about system design, about, you know, knowing how, where to store things and what documents you might need and all of that sort of stuff that I used to do in my previous life. So that was where I really played to my strengths, you know, because I knew how to design forms. I mean, the forms that I was given to begin with, instruction forms to write in a will, were like, I'm looking at them going, who designed those? And immediately I just went and redesigned them. And actually, they are now the forms that the Society of Will Writers use. So I knew that I had some real strengths, but the surprises were more around the little things that I had, as I say, no idea about social media. But the other thing, really positive surprise, was just the amount of support I got in the local business community. You know, so
coming back more to this, I'd not run a business before. Some reflective questions then. What do you think's been your best investment? And when I say to date, I suppose I'm referring to since the beginning of Morecambe Bay Wills.
So I think the best investment is the time that we spend out in the community. That's a big investment. Now, whether that's networking in local businesses or doing lunch and learn sessions in local businesses to spread awareness, or sitting down in community groups and, you know, chatting to their, you know, maybe the Parkinson's group or something like that about what the things that they should have. So that's a big investment in time. So I think that that's one thing. I think the other thing is an investment in social media. And I mean that because, you know, I talk to local businesses all the time, or other business owners. I was talking to someone today and they just said, oh, I haven't got time. And I made the decision very quickly that this was something that if we were going to try and reach out to the local community, we needed to be reaching out on local groups. And I wanted to be able to, someone would just Google, you know, where do I go for a will in Lancaster or Morecambe? And we would be the people that would come up. And that takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of time. So we've invested in that, as you know. And I think it's the one thing that's really, really paid off for us, because we get a lot of business from that. However, we've invested in giving a really, really comprehensive service. So a good example is, if you go and make a power of attorney with some firms, they will literally get you to the point where they've drafted those documents for your powers of attorney, and then they send you them in a post and you do everything else. Literally, you do everything else. And they are charging the same price as we are charging. But what we do is we then make sure they're signed, all in the right order. We get all of your attorney's signatures. We send them off for registration. We track them through that process. When we get them back, we get them back. We look after them. And I think that that's an investment. It's an investment in making sure that the process is end to end. We're not giving you just a little bit of knowledge up front.
Yeah.
And I think that comes down to actually my experience of, you know, process improvement and process engineering, which is what I used to do, and understanding, you know, what value you add to a client and what things are non-value added, and allow you to then say, okay, I don't think I need to be doing this, but I do think if I do this, then that will make us stand out, because people will say, actually, if you go there, they'll really look after you and they'll babysit it through.
Yeah. Leadership style, what would you use to describe your style?
There is the Myers-Briggs 16 personalities. And every time I'd done this in my corporate background, I used to come out as commander. And I can't remember what the four, the people who will be in, will remember what it is, EY, I don't know.
EN,
or,
whatever
it is. So I used to always come out as commander, which I loved because it was like driven and, you know, great leader, da 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 da. But the downside of it was cold and ruthless. And it always stuck with me, and it didn't matter what job I did, I was always this commander. And I really, although it was right, I didn't want it to be right. I didn't want the cold and ruthless thing. And it was because I wasn't very ambitious, but I was very good at what I did, and it was just, I just want to get the job done. And sometimes emotion didn't come into it. So now I redid this 2 years ago. In fact, it might have been longer. I think it was in COVID. And I redid it and I came out with a completely different profile called Defender. And I was like, it was not diametrically opposite, but it was very much more empathetic. And I was no longer cold and ruthless. You are. You know, I was like, I'm not cold and ruthless anymore. So I think I lead by example. And I think I've always done that. You know, if I want a job doing, I'm prepared to do it myself. I will show you how to do it. And I believe very much in, you know, don't just tell people, you know, it's the age old thing around training people. You know, they need to see it. They need to hear it. They need to see it. And then they need to do it type of thing. And I put a lot of effort into that. And I think I also, you know, I think I'm quite a generous person with my time. But I also want people to realise that it's not just my business. It is my business. I'm the sole director. But, you know, last year I made a decision that, you know, this business was never really set up to make profit. And you know, we don't make a lot of profit, but we do make profit. And I wanted to do something with that profit. So actually, I decided that the team were going to share half of the profit. So, you know, they the more profit we make, the more they're going to get. And the other half of the profit was going to go plow back into community stuff. So that's charity donations or, you know, helping out with something in the community. And I think that that is a very, very, very different approach to how I would have been in the corporate world. I think I would have been much more about me, which is probably the cold and ruthless piece, whereas now it's much more about other people. But I think I probably have the luxury of doing that from a financial perspective. I'm relatively okay, but actually I think that whole life experience has changed the way that I am as a manager, as a leader, and as a person. I'm still a control freak, but
no. So if you could, a bit more of a reflective question now, go back and whisper in the ear of 15, 16-year-old Nicola and say, now, listen, I need to tell you this. What do you think that thing would be?
I think don't be afraid. And just use your gut because it will come right. I've always probably been quite an impulsive person and made impulsive decisions. And I think for a lot of people, what feels right is right. So don't dither about stuff. Just get on and do it.
Follow it.
And hope it works out.
What would you use to measure success?
I think when someone says you've done a good job, you are doing a good job. I mean, I've been recognised last year personally in the British Wills and Probate Awards. You know, and that's good. It's kudos, isn't it? It's, you know, somebody says in these, you know, the whole of the British Wills and Probate arena, you have been chosen as the one to watch, you know, the practitioner of the year, you know. And I had a lot of imposter syndrome. I've come from nowhere in this industry. So I think that's a real measure of success, you know. But I think a lot of that is because I'm willing to put aside time. And I talked about not saying no often enough. But that's rewarded me in other ways, you know, by being able to help someone and say, look, when I started out, I didn't have these templates. Do you want them? You know, or when I started out, I had no idea how the Office of the Public Guardian worked, who register powers of attorney. Here you are. Jump on a call for half an hour and I'll tell you how it works and what you need to think about. And so when people say she gives her time generously, I think that's my measure of success, because that's what I set out to do. I didn't set out to make loads of money. I didn't set out to employ local people. I set out to spread awareness and give back in one form or the other. And I think I've achieved that.
I've asked this of everybody and I've had some really surprising responses. So we talked about this being like an entrepreneur's podcast. And one person said, don't refer to me as an entrepreneur. I am not. I hate the word. I mean, he had a real, didn't like it at all. And his view was there is no such thing as an entrepreneur. There's just people that take risk and people that talk about taking risk. Mm-hmm. And one of the comments you just talked about, which is you said, you know, I could go by my gut, is interesting, but yet contradictory, because I think you can do that because you're a planner. So when you do make a decision, you can then put a plan in place. I don't think anyone who knows you thinks that you're just flailing your arms and legs around and seeing, you know, what lands. I don't think that's the case. So do you, I suppose, first of all, do you subscribe to the idea that there is such thing as an entrepreneur? And if you do, would you say you were one? Or is there no such thing and you've got another explanation as to why you didn't just think I could do that better and then move on and go and do something else? You actually thought I can do that better and I am going to go and do that. What's the difference and what's the entrepreneur part there?
I think it's, for me, it's going off and doing something that's probably unexpected. And so, you know, to be, if you use the word entrepreneur, I don't use the word entrepreneur myself. But I think it's, you know, entrepreneurs suggest that you're going off and doing something really new. You know, you may be being a bit of a disruptor, you know, you're doing maybe even doing something that somebody's not done before, or, you know, going off and doing something by yourself. And I think what I've done is a bit of all of that. But probably more, it was something that was being unexpected. I mean, people said to me, are you sure? You know, you've just lost someone and you're going to go and talk about death all day. Mm. So I think, you know, going up and doing something unexpected. But you're right. I mean, you said about, I don't just go off and just say, oh, I'm just going to do that and I haven't got a plan. I do have a plan, you know, but I weigh up the pros and cons and then go, well, there's enough pros. And I'll work on whatever the cons are. And I think in order to take a risk, you need to be able to do that. You need to understand a bit, you know, what the potential disadvantages, but know they're not as many as the advantages, and be prepared to deal with them if they come up.
And I think that's the point. I think when someone's got quite an entrepreneurial spirit, they talk about risk not realizing as their gut.
Yeah.
But actually, I think it's what's happening is it's a very calculated. Yeah, there's a mitigation of risk. There's a calculation. Yeah. There's a self-belief. And then there becomes I'll take action now.
Yeah.
But they very loosely describe that as I go with my gut. But actually, I think that doesn't give it the credit that's kind of occurring as they are drilling through all of that in the mind, as opposed to the person who sits in a circumstance and says, I could do this miles better. I could do this. I could do this miles better. But then goes back to work on Monday and never pursues that goal.
Yeah, I don't think I actually sat there and ever thought about I'm going to go back to work on Monday, if that makes sense. I saw this and I thought, you know, I think I could really do this, and I understand there is some risk associated with it, but I am willing to invest a certain amount of money or invest some of my time. And if it doesn't work out, then I'm okay with it. But if it wasn't going to work out, it was only from an emotional perspective. It wasn't from want of a trying or, you know, having the skills or whatever it was. It was just, you know, it might be too emotional. And it never was. It was just like, I mean, it is emotional. It is absolutely emotional, you know, at times. But it's never been negatively like that. And so I thrive on it because I love doing what I do. I absolutely love doing what I do. And I think an entrepreneur, if you use that term, has to love what they're doing. Because if they don't, what is the point? You might as well just go back and work for someone else.
My thanks go to Nicola of Morecambe Bay Wills and Estates. That's the end of part 1. Do join us again soon, where we speak to Nicola again in part 2.